This episode is supported by Active Skin Repair. Active Skin Repair is a skin health company helping people heal with natural, non-toxic, medical-grade ingredients. I just randomly, Vinny was having a toe skin irritation issue, and he ended up having this like skin that was really irritating him, and it was getting kind of like icky, and you know, like when kids start to get like little scabs and scratches and then they want to pick at it, and it was getting worse. And so Active Skin Repair showed up on my doorstep as a result of the sponsorship, and I got to put it to use immediately. And I got the ointment formula, or the like ointment formulation, and then also the spray, and the spray was perfect. So Vinny does not like ointmenty, creamy, lotiony things on his body, but I was able to get out the spray, literally took it out of the packaging the day it arrived, put it on his toe before he went to bed. And the next morning he was like, "Mom, my toe's all better." It was literally like this super amazing cure that helped his toes so quickly. So you can use Active Skin Repair on a wide range of skin issues, including cuts, scrapes, burns, sunburns, rashes, other types of skin damage. It's totally safe, non-toxic, suitable on all types of skin, even parts of the body where you might have rosacea or eczema or have acne-prone skin. This is also safe for the youngest members of your family up to the oldest. So now you have one simple solution for your family's skin health needs. With over 500,000 happy customers and thousands of five-star reviews and super safe and clean ingredients, Active Skin Repair is something that you want to have on hand for your family. So to get your own Active Skin Repair, go to activeskinrepair.com to learn more about Active Skin Repair and get 20% off your order when you use the code SHAMELESS. That's activeskinrepair.com. Use the code SHAMELESS for 20% off your order. activeskinrepair.com, code SHAMELESS. This is the Shameless Mom Academy, episode 232 with Gina Fresquez. Show notes for this episode, including all links mentioned and links to any discounts with our sponsors, can be found by going to shamelessmom.com and clicking on episode 232. Welcome to the Shameless Mom Academy. I'm your host, Sarah Dean, and I'm here to give you and other passionate, dedicated moms the tools you need to bridge the gap between motherhood and living the life of your dreams. I'm also here to help you be a little more shameless every day. Because if you aren't building a life you're extraordinarily proud of, what kind of legacy are you building? So let's dive in. Gina Fresquez is a clarity and confidence coach and a number one international best-selling author. She's also the founder of the Women's Side Hustle Society, where she is committed to empowering ambitious, soulful, side-hustling women to bring their biggest entrepreneurial dreams to life in a way that's infused with confidence, joy, ease, and freedom, without having to sacrifice their health, sanity, or lifestyle. After many years in corporate sales and nutrition, Gina's dream of becoming an entrepreneur came true in 2012 when she started her first side hustle. Since then, she has enjoyed the journey of strategically and intuitively coaching her clients through mitigating fears, breakthroughs, transitions, and transformations of building a successful business in a way that feels good to them. Gina accomplishes this through one-on-one coaching, masterminds, and women's retreats. She also loves sharing her stories of amazing, successful side hustling women on her podcast, Women's Side Hustle Society. Gina is the shameless mom to three-year-old Ezra, and Ezra was diagnosed with sensory processing disorder 6 months ago. I was so grateful to have Gina spend a lot of the show today really talking about that before we dig into some of her professional ambition and excitement. So Gina had long wondered why Ezra's behavior was such a departure from her and her husband's calm, chill ways. And after a powerful conversation with a preschool teacher, Gina took action to learn about how Ezra learns and experiences the world. And it has completely changed her as a mom. Listen in to hear Gina share her experience parenting a child with SPD, sensory processing disorder, the signs, the treatment, and the daily coping. She'll also share learning self-regulation with SPD. She'll share why she walked away from a corporate job that she loved, how her side hustling resulted in her becoming an international best-selling author, how you can find your own soulful side hustle, and how to take the stairs instead of taking a risky leap into new territory, whether you're dealing with your child who might have some special needs or you're dealing with your professional life and ambition. But let's go ahead and dive in with Gina Fresquez. Gina Fresquez, welcome to the Shameless Mom Academy. I'm so, so excited to have you here.
I'm so excited to be here.
This has been a while in the making. So we got connected to get listeners up to speed. We were connected through a colleague, a mutual friend, our friend Melody. And I feel like every time we see each other at events, we're like, we need to go get wine and we need to do podcast interviews and we need to do all these things. And it's so hard to do it all because there's never enough time. So
no, because we're both moms and yeah, all the things.
Right. Yeah. We're both moms. Yeah. We both have our hustles and, mm-hmm. and our side hustles yep. to our hustles and all those things. So it's so fun. And also I'll just share with our listeners that, and probably by the time this goes live, my interview with you on your show will be out. So last week, this is like, I feel like we've gotten to hang out so much because we recorded for your show last yeah. week, I think it was.
Last week, yeah.
And then now we're recording for my show. So yay. I'll make sure I link to the interview on your show in the show notes here so that people can pop over and check that out as well.
Yeah,
check
people it. Can get all sorts of conversations.
Yes, I know. They can just listen to us all day. Everyone's
keep
dream.
Fly on the wall. Yeah.
Totally. So I'm really excited to dive into all things related to shameless mom life, which I know is especially shameless for you right now. And mm-hmm. all things related to your career, because that's also really shameless.
So it is.
Tell us a little bit more about the dynamics of your personal and professional life beyond your bio and what you're most excited about right now.
Oh, yeah. Beyond my bio, right? Bios yeah. are always so official. So, you know, I'm a mom, I'm a wife. I mean, those are the things that I feel like on a daily, you know, you're just in the thick of it with just managing all of that.
Mm-hmm.
Right now, like I find myself talking about lately a lot right now, you know, when you like kind of see patterns
yeah.
is, you know, talking about SPD, which we'll get into, I'm sure, with my son, sensory processing disorder. And like, I feel more of a call to spread the news about that and what that really is. And then oh my gosh, I'm just like, there's so much going on. You're catching
so
me in the middle,
many
so
things
many
to
things.
Choose from.
And then we'll talk about this, I'm sure. But, you know, I just had a book that just released this week. So this mm-hmm. is like really exciting to be on the show today because my book just released. We already hit number one international bestselling. And so there's the mission behind the book, which is something that's actually been coming up a lot for me lately. You know, my story that comes out in the book is really personal around me starting my side hustle, starting my business and choosing to do things differently, which is very shameless, right?
Right.
Around like doing things differently and maybe not the way that you've seen other people do it. And then though what has come fully and what I feel like now is really important is just giving people permission to tell their stories.
Yeah.
And that every story, like every life path, every story is valuable. And I feel like this is like a new message that's coming up for me lately. And obviously I'm sharing it with you today. It's just the whole process of like, and what came about is so with the book that I'm in, there's 30 different authors and everybody had this fear. Everybody had the fear of like, well, my story is not that big of a deal. I don't think I should share my story, right? Mm. And it's just, especially right now, Sarah, like with the time that we're in right now, women need to be talking.
Yeah.
Women need to be telling their story. And it doesn't matter if you think your story isn't good enough. It is. And somebody will resonate with your story. And that's a lot of the fears that came up for me because, you know, I don't feel like I've had huge life challenges. I mean, but it's all relative, right? Like we've all had our own experiences. And I think the more we can talk about our experiences, the more we can share and resonate and empathize and have compassion for each other.
Yeah.
And I don't know, that's kind of been my message lately as far as what's lighting me up right now is like it doesn't matter if you think your story is run of the mill. I actually have a dear friend of mine from college who has also been to one of my retreats and kind of one of my clients. And she's always thought she was boring. You know what I mean? Like yeah. thinking that she has nothing to talk about. Thinking that there's no really interesting story about her life that she could talk about. And I kind of want to challenge people lately around that. It's like, yeah. I'm sure there's a story somewhere that somebody will relate to that.
Right. So that's such an interesting point. So for people listening who aren't familiar with the entrepreneurial space in it to any degree, I think that being an entrepreneur forces you to identify with your story. And I think that, which I really enjoy because I love stories and I've always loved stories and I've always loved telling stories and I've always been, you know, someone who liked to make jokes of, or not jokes, but like find the lighthearted moments in heavy
yeah.
things. And so I've always really valued that. But I think that when you become an entrepreneur, you really have to like kind of dig into like, what is my story? How did I get here? How can I share that? How can I use that to connect with people?
Yeah.
And so if you haven't ever been forced to do that because you're maybe your profession or no circumstances have pushed you in that direction, I totally understand where you could be like, well, I mean, nothing awful has ever happened to me. Like, you know, I mean,
yeah.
this will sound like so awful, but just, well, you know, I've never been raped or homeless or beaten or whatever.
Exactly.
Like all these, you think of like these really, really
yep.
horrible, horrendous things.
Mm-hmm.
And you're like, well, I mean, none of those things ever happened to me. So like, I don't really have a story. And that's so not the case. And
exactly.
it doesn't need to be, I mean, just like when you think about Instagram comparison of photos and those kinds of things, it's like, we also don't need to be comparing, like if my trauma was as big as your trauma.
Exactly.
That's not
oh my
what
gosh.
It's about.
Yeah.
But I can totally understand when you start thinking about sharing your story and building a message around a story, that's where our minds go. We go into that kind of
competitive place. Will tell you, I was like, so true for me doing this book project. And I actually just posted this week a podcast around this story. It's called My Story's Vanilla, because that's what came up for me when I started writing my story. And my publisher was like, no, your story's like, she's like, you're crazy. Like, I mean, 'cause she sees it from a different view, right? Yeah. And so when we're so close to something, we just think it's not that big of a deal.
Totally.
And I love that you shared that, because I think that's where I was at. I mean, there's women in the stories who their children have died, they've overcome cancer, you know, I mean, like things that I was just like, I'm just like in awe of them.
Yeah.
And all of their accomplishments and how they've, you know, gotten through all of these challenges. And then, so then I was saying to myself, right, fears that come up, who am I to share my story, right? Like, my story is not as worthy as, you know, I'm not as worthy as them. And so that fear comes up. And because it's true, I moved around a lot as a kid. And yeah, you know, starting businesses is hard and like all these things. But there was a part of me that's like, well, nothing really big happened to me, right?
Right.
And I think this is where I think, right now, where I'm at right now, is like, okay, that's the message that needs to be said. Like, it doesn't matter if you think it's a big deal or not, like, share that story. Mm-hmm. And even if you're not an entrepreneur, I was telling somebody the other day around, like, tell your sister, tell your friend, tell your cousin, tell your neighbor, like, tell stories, like, just of something that happened, whether it's good or bad, or, you know, something that you learned. And it's just, I don't know, it's becoming more and more apparent these days.
Yeah. Well, and even if you've had something that a lot of people experience. So for in my example, like, you know, my parents got divorced when I was 4 and a half.
Yeah.
So like so many people have that experience, but to be dismissive of it and be like, well, I mean, my parents got divorced. They didn't really ever fight. It was kind of not a big deal. And that, which is really how I addressed it for most of my life, because really, like, I don't remember a time when they were together. It wasn't like a big traumatic thing in terms of like them arguing and fighting over custody and like that kind of stuff.
Right.
But it still really, really shaped who I am. And I'm only just discovering this in my early 40s, like only in my early 40s. And I'm like, oh, actually, that was like a major life event, because I don't remember it. And because it wasn't super traumatic in the moment doesn't mean that there wasn't a lot of stuff that happened around that situation.
Yeah.
And even though millions of people have experienced this, it's still a big thing. And so I totally agree with you about talking about that. And I've definitely started talking more about that with friends and different people in my life, just kind of the impact of that and realizing that sometimes events, even though so many of us experience common events, those are still very, very formative and life-changing. Yeah. And life altering.
And you can still talk about them.
Yeah.
Just because it's common doesn't mean that it's actually, this is one of the things that my publisher did. She's like, because it's common, it will resonate more.
Totally. Yes. Like more people will be able to connect with it.
Yeah. So that was like a huge like mindset shift for me that I had in just the whole process of writing the book. But some of the work, and it's so funny because it ties in, which I didn't even know it at the time, of like what I actually do with my clients, which is getting really clear on what it is they do, who they are, what's their purpose, like what do they really want to be doing, like in their starting their businesses, and then having the confidence to like go do it. Right. And so we do dive into the story part, like what makes you unique, right? Yeah. Like, if I work with a lot of like life coaches and health coaches and, you know, all different types of people, but the first thing we do is identify parts of their stories.
Right.
You know, it's funny how it comes full circle.
Definitely. Definitely. Okay. We're going to go readdress this in a minute, but I want to shift gears a little bit because I want to talk more about how you got into the writing and how you got in the different side hustles that you've had, because that's what your business is all about. But before we go that route, I want to talk a little bit about motherhood for you. Mm-hmm. And you being a shameless mom, as I know that you are, and I know that you've become particularly shameless in the last 6 months. So tell us about how motherhood has evolved for you in the last 6 months. What was life like before and how is it different now?
Yeah. Ugh, such a good topic. So my son, I have a 3.5-year-old.
Who is Spirit adorable. Oh my gosh. He's the cutest little, I mean, from social media.
I mean, he has like big blue eyes.
Yes.
He's an awe over him. And he is such a spitfire and he's so sweet, but he's super sensitive, super intense. I mean, these are words that like, when you think about your kid, when you start, I don't know if there's like words that you've always described your kid as, like, you know, there's just words that always come up. Oh, like when people ask about your child, you're like, oh, he's this and this and this. For my son, like intense has always been a word that I've used with him, even from a very young age, like as a baby. He's just very intense. And so that's kind of how we started out, right? This relationship, getting to know your child when they're first born. And what has happened in the last 6 months is that he has been diagnosed with sensory processing disorder, which before I even, 6 months ago, I had no clue what that even was. Like, it wasn't even on my radar, okay? But I also had a young baby, you know, I didn't discover it until he went to preschool. And I think that that's sometimes we don't know what we don't know.
Exactly.
And sometimes when you're kind of in your own world, and we had done a nanny share, so we were just with one other kid, and, you know, your head's down and you don't know how other kids are. No gauge, no comparison. All I knew, to be honest, Sarah, is that I was having a really hard time with him. Mm-hmm. Like, he is so intense, like highly emotional, like intense emotions, intense physically. But then at the same time, you have no idea where it's coming from, because he's also very sweet. And he's coming from a family who are like, my husband and I like wouldn't even hurt a fly. Like, we're very like low key, mellow people. Like, I don't even like to wrestle, you know, like play wrestling. Like, I'm just a very
I'm totally the same way. Like, this is a
person, right?
Vinny's class, like, started playing this wrestling game, like, with the teacher supervising it last year. And I was like, I'm pretty sure this is like goes against my like core values. Like, so I totally understand what you mean. And I also had a very intense baby. And yeah, you're like, where is this coming from? Like, how did this happen? So I didn't want to interrupt you.
And this is like the part that I think that was a huge aha for me. So, and this is like one of the stories that I tell a lot, is I used to like, Ezra has always been not difficult because he's such a great, bright child, but he's just intense and it just takes a lot of management. And intuitively, right, before 6 months ago, I was doing the best that I could, right? But then you hear comments like when anybody, like when I say, oh, like he's like this, or I'm exhausted or whatever, like I literally felt exhausted. And I was like, why is this so hard? And other people who didn't know Ezra, or, you know, everybody wants to have their two cents, they're like, oh, it's just because he's a boy, or oh, it's just because, you know, you're a new mom, or like everybody
terrible twos or the whatever. Yeah, like there's like, always like just, a reason that it's
there's always
awful.
A reason. Yeah. Like, oh, it's just like, and they kind of like discredit how you're feeling. Like, I'm like, I'm resourceful. I am tough. Like, I've done lots of great things in my life. Why is this child like bringing me to my knees every day? And for me, it felt really like tough. Like, people would just be like, oh, it's just because this is your first kid. Oh, it's just because he's a boy. Like, I think those are all well and good, because I think people say that because they just want you to feel better. But what it does is it feels like your feelings are not validated.
Yeah. Yeah.
He'd be emotional about it. Because what happened to me, so our preschool teacher asked me to come in early one day. And you totally think, because Ezra was getting in trouble a lot, like playing, like I always have to be on the defense with him. Like when we go to the park, like he's just really aggressive. And it just, again, I didn't know why he was this way. He just was. And it was just hard to deal with. And so she set me down, and I thought she was going to be like, he gets in trouble, that she like wanted to kick him out of the preschool or something like that. But she sat me down and she was so sweet. And she said, I've been noticing Ezra over the last couple months, and I think that he has some parts of sensory processing disorder. And here's what I'm seeing. And she had this whole list of signs that she was noticing. And she's like, you know, I've had a child before who had this, and occupational therapy really helped. So I'm letting you know, because I want you to look into it. And I like that day, huge validation of how I was feeling.
Yeah. Like someone else was seeing what you were seeing, and also maybe had like a solution a little, you know, some resources.
Like, yes, Ezra is. Yeah. It's like, yes, your son is more intense. Yes, your son is off the norm. Not that there's any normal kids, but in like, it was a small preschool of only six kids. Right. And he was the one that was, you know, demonstrating all these, you know, so it's again, you know, everybody's kid is different and everybody's kid is unique. But when you have a kid that's a little bit on a different end of a spectrum, it just, you know, it's more difficult to manage. And so it was hugely validating, because all this time I thought it was just me. Mm-hmm. And I couldn't handle it as a mom, right? Yeah. And that like I just didn't have the grit to deal with a child like that, right? And so it was hugely validating. And then once I started working with our OT, who is like my best friend now, I love her, because I can just bring all of this to her, and she just validates and she helps and she gives you tools. And she like, oh, it's just been so amazing the last 6 months to have somebody like on your team who is there with you and, you know, is there for your child's best interest and is really trying to help figure out ways to help regulate him and manage him in a healthier way. And so it's only been 6 months, but it's been a huge journey, and just the validation part and looking at my son differently, as far as like knowing that he needs extra support, or that, you know, he is, you know, not fully regulated with his senses. And we can get into a whole different talk about like sensory processing and educating the public about it, because that's one of the things that I've noticed is that a lot of people don't even know about it. Right. And it's not the same as autistic, though almost all autistic kids have sensory processing disorder, but not all sensory processing kids have autism. And so Ezra is one of those unique kids that's not on the autism spectrum, but that he has sensory processing disorder. So it's really difficult because people, one, either want to label him, or two, they don't understand because it's not autism. Mm-hmm. So I feel like autism at least has gotten enough.
It doesn't fit into a box that people can really clearly define.
And I will tell you that that is my son in a nutshell. He does not fit into a box. Like, I had his, you know, get into the woo-woo stuff. I had his natal birth chart done by my friend right when he was born, and he was born to be different. He was born to stand out. He was born to be different. He is all fire and all water. He's my little fiery baby. And I knew that from the beginning, but it's just funny how you see how that plays out.
Yeah.
This episode is supported by AquaTrue. Having clean, safe water is the last thing you want to worry about. But unfortunately, according to extensive research by the Environmental Working Group, 3 out of 4 homes in America have harmful contaminants in their tap water. So that's why you got to check out AquaTrue. AquaTrue purifiers have a 4-stage reverse osmosis purification process, and their countertop purifiers, which is what we have, take no installation or plumbing, and they remove 15 times more contaminants than ordinary pitcher filters, and they're specifically designed to combat chemicals like PFAS, which can lead to potentially adverse health effects like cancer, endocrine system disruption, and liver toxicity, which is part of what makes AquaTrue so special, unique, and important in terms of how they are able to filter water. They also have water purifiers to fit every type of home. So like the installation-free countertop purifier that we have at our house, to higher capacity under sink options. They even have Wi-Fi connected purifiers and mineral boost options. So I'm so excited about our new AquaTrue. And here's the thing. I swear it's like a gentle reminder to actually drink more water every time you walk into your kitchen. So we are drinking more water now, and also more clean water. So more water that is more clean. It feels like a double win. I'm feeling pretty impressed with us. I feel like sink water, tap water becomes invisible at a certain point. And when I see the purifier on my counter, it's like many time a day reminder to like, keep drinking. So I want you to check out AquaTrue for yourself and for your family. AquaTrue comes with a 30-day money back guarantee, and that makes it a great gift as well. Today, my listeners can receive 20% off any AquaTrue purifier when you go to AquaTrue.com. That's AquaTrue.com, and enter the code Shameless at checkout. That's 20% off any AquaTrue purifier when you go to AquaTrue.com and use the code Shameless, S-H-A-M-E-L-E-S-S. AquaTrue.com, code Shameless. This episode is supported by a podcast I want to share with you called Understood Explains. So this show is about navigating ADHD, dyslexia, and other learning and thinking differences, which can be so confusing. And so every season of the show is around a different theme. So there's a season on special education, there's a season on ADHD diagnosis for adults, and the current season is all about IEPs. I love this podcast because the episodes are 10 to 15 minutes long. So if you are short on time or short on focus, you can take this content in super quickly, easily. It's very digestible. And the show is hosted by teacher and special education expert Juliana Urtube. So Juliana talks all about how to navigate educational plans, IEPs. She talks about the differences between IEPs and 504 plans. She really breaks things down in a really clear and simple way so that you have some of those questions that you might be thinking around, like, does this pertain to my child? Is this something I need to be looking into? Like, where do we go from here? Where do I go if I have questions? Juliana has you covered. She explains so many different things and so many different little pieces and nuance of IEPs and special education and different things on Understood Explains. So I want you to go check it out wherever you're listening to this podcast. You can go listen to Understood Explains. Just go into your podcast app, do a search for Understood Explains, and it will pop right up. Click on it, pick your episode, and get the answers that you've been looking for and the support that you need around different learning differences and differences in school.
So yeah.
That's so interesting. We went through a little bit of OT with Vinny for anxiety, and I would totally agree that it's so comforting to have that person, to the occupational therapist, to like bounce things off of and get some support from. And they just see things in such a different way where you're like, oh, and there's one of the biggest thing for us. And I think I talked about this on the show like a year or so ago, but they taught us a lot about pattern interrupts. And so Vinny is like, things have to go a certain way. And like, yes, it's really hard to break the patterns. And sometimes the patterns are really obnoxious, like getting up 13 times after bedtime. And like, you like can't change the pattern no matter how hard you try. And there's like no bargaining around it. Like if you only get up six times, I'll give you a cookie in the morning or whatever. Like you can't, that doesn't work. So she was so helpful in having like pattern interrupts for us so we could just completely like reset different behaviors. But what I learned in that whole process is the benefit of, you know, like I'm someone who worked in early childhood. I worked in a psychiatric hospital with kids ages 4 to 14. I was like, I know these things. I know how to do behavior modification. When it comes to your own kid though, you are so in it. You can't see out of it.
Yes.
I so understand what you mean about having that occupational therapist be so key. Can you tell us a little bit about, because I think this would be helpful for listeners, the behaviors that you were witnessing before you had the diagnosis and like kind of the things that stood out to you or maybe to the teacher where you thought like, oh, maybe it would be worth going to, you know, talk to a doctor, a therapist and looking at, is this something that we could manage in a different way or that could be treatable in a certain way?
Yeah. So the thing about sensory processing disorder, and this is kind of fair warning, is that there's a huge spectrum and there's a huge, not one child is going to look the same.
Right.
And not that that like, you know, you can say that for everything, but because when it comes to, you know, we all have our senses and you can either be a sensory seeker. Well, okay. And when you really think about senses, we all have different sensory needs. Some of us have really sensitive hearing, sometimes our taste or whatever. It's just the disorder part comes in when it's so either intense on either direction that it disrupts daily life. Okay. So that's the way that it's been explained to me, or at least the way that I've digested it. Mm-hmm. And so kids are either sensory, well, we're all either sensory seekers or sensory avoiders on the disorder type spectrum. So you can either be a sensory, like with one sense in particular, you can either be a seeker or an avoider. So an example would be, so like an avoider, which Ezra doesn't have a lot of avoiding, he's mostly a seeker, but an avoider would be, we all know these kids and maybe some of our listeners have them, is like kids that like everything bugs them, like tags bug them, pants bug them, socks bugs them, you know, they just physically like anything that's touching them weird. It's like they have a total meltdown, right?
Yeah.
I mean, we've all seen those kids. I think my niece used to want like all her tags to be taken out. Now, that's the only thing that like stands out. That's manageable, right? Like if, you know, you just take all the tags out, okay, good, you're good to go.
Yeah. And so to some degree, some of that is normal, just so that everyone who is like, wait, do I need to go get my kid diagnosed because they can't handle their socks?
Exactly. If that's piled onto all these other ones, right? And that's why it takes a lot of evaluation to even determine if your kid has sensory processing disorder, because there's no just like one test, you know, I mean, you just can't just, you know, I don't know. Okay. So that's like a sensory avoider or taste. Like some kids, you know, all they do is eat white rice and white bread and they don't like any flavor. Well, that would be a child who is a taste bud, you know, like their sense of taste is an avoider. They don't want, they're not seeking intense flavors. They're actually avoiding them. Again, maybe doable, right? It's when all of you start seeing a lot of these pile up. So a sensory seeker. Okay. So for Ezra specifically, I can talk to, because again, there's kids all over the spectrum. But so Ezra, he is a sensory avoider with his ears, so with his hearing. And so, but you see this a lot in autistic kids too. Like when he's in an environment that's really loud and there's a lot of different types of noises, he gets anxiety, speaking of anxiety, right? And so that turns up his fight or flight mode.
And so anxiety for him looks like what?
For him, he gets like, what if you're thinking like a temperature gauge, right? And their energy is going up and there's lots of sound. He can't decipher. Like if you and I were talking in a crowded conference room, you know how you and I could like focus on each other and kind of drown out everything. He just takes everything in, which is funny because I've always thought he's had superhuman hearing ever since a really. And so again, these kind of validations, right, that have come up. So he hears everything. And so he's taking it all in. And if you can imagine hearing everything at once and not being able to filter out anything, it's going to cause you to have anxiety. And so for him, what kids do when usually they have anxiety, they either, you know, flight, fight, or freeze are the three kind of primal things that happen when we go into kind of anxiety or scared mode. Mm-hmm. For him, he's a fighter. Okay. And so, you know, every kid's different. This is what shows up for us all the time, like at school, and the management issues that we have is he's a fighter. So he's going to hit, he's going to kick, he's going to bite, he's going to just do whatever he can in that instant without even thinking about it, right? Some kids run, some kids totally just like sit down and start crying, right? Mm-hmm. And that would be the freeze. He's a fighter. And I'm always like scared for when he's like a teenager, because he doesn't even think twice. His initial reaction without even thinking is to be physical. So that's one of his things. But then he's also really sweet. So again, it's not because he's coming from a home that's physical or a bad environment. It's not environmental. It's truly how he's wired. So that obviously causes problems. He also, like, weird things that our preschool teacher came up, like, he has a really high pain tolerance, really high pain tolerance. So, like, he falls, his knee will be bleeding, it doesn't even faze him, he'll keep on going. What else is some of the things that she noticed? He's really sensitive to light. He's like my little vampire baby. It's just like weird things that just you start noticing that, again,
over time.
I would have just equated it to, oh, that's just how Ezra is.
Right, right.
So it was so interesting that, you know, she kind of took a list of things. I wonder if I have that list somewhere. And it's just kind of like, you know, I'm just noticing these little things. He gets these like explosive, you know, tantrums, which, you know, yeah, he was two.
But he's two, right. You're like, but he's two. This is what two-year-olds do.
Exactly. Yeah. And that's sometimes the feedback that I get. And it's a little bit frustrating, but that's the way that I can explain it to people who maybe have experienced my son, or I'm trying to explain it to people, is it, yes, because he's in that 2 to 3 age. So I say, you know, any typical toddler behavior, but you turn the dial way up on it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah.
And that's what's been actually really hard as a mom, is trying to decipher between what's toddler behavior and what's SPD behavior. And this is actually a conversation that I have almost daily with our OT, or weekly when we show up for our, you know, weekly session with her. I'm always like, okay, so this is what's going on. Is this just typical toddler stuff, or is this, you know, SPD stuff? And we kind of weed through all of that.
Yeah. So how does it feel different now that you have a diagnosis and you feel like you have, you're gaining tools and you have someone, you have the teacher who is, like, you know, obviously so on your side, and you have the occupational therapist who is being so helpful and supportive. What does it feel like now to be in this spot currently?
Yeah. Well, it didn't make any sense to me of why occupational therapy would help, because it literally is like him playing in a jungle
yes,
gym.
It's play therapy. And
it's
play
therapy. And like, he gets to do all these climbing things, and then he has to get to play puzzles. And like, to me, it doesn't compute on like why that would help. But
you're like, basically, this is a really expensive babysitter.
Right. And I'm always like, it doesn't make sense, but it has to do with like the brain pathways and the neuro stuff. And it's mind blowing.
Yeah.
So he's made a lot of headway in the last 6 months as far as like how he is. Like, I was just talking to ROT yesterday about it. And I said, so like, if you catch it early, you're helping him to self-soothe and to self-regulate and to kind of be aware of this and know what's appropriate behavior or not. And what she said, I said, well, what's our outcome? Like, if he's older, like when he's 10, are we going to still be doing this? And she's like, well, we're going to give him the tools and keep on, you know, that muscle memory so that where it can self-regulate. So it doesn't mean he's not going to be, his sensories are going to be, you know, it's not like he'll never be, like, he'll always be a sensitive hearing, right?
Yeah, yeah.
But he will be better at self-regulating himself.
Yes, yeah.
Yeah. And so that's like the goal. And so we've seen a lot of headway. Oh, so the other thing he's really intensive with, so proprioception is like pressure on your body.
Mm-hmm.
And so those kids that are really intense with their body, like, again, he's a hitter, but he also gets like, he wants to be really physical and wrestle and push things and pick up really big things and like, just like all this like pressure on his body. And that's, he's a sensory seeker for that. So again, okay. He craves this like intense pressure.
Yeah.
Which goes against my, like, every cell in my being, because I'm not like that at all.
Right.
So, yes, that's just one. I just wanted to make sure you note that, too. Like, a very intense body.
Yeah.
So how has it changed? Like, it's just, one, it's been validating. Two, we've seen a lot of, like, work. But then also, like, I feel like getting to the shameless mom part, like, I've been really shameless about not having him have a label. Because that was one of the things that our preschool teacher told us. She's like, you know, what happens with kids with Ezra, and this is like, this hits home so close to me. And I think for a lot of moms, if this wasn't brought to your attention or to his attention, what's going to happen is as he goes into school and goes into elementary school, he's going to be labeled as the bad kid.
Mm-hmm.
And he's going to be labeled as the naughty kid because of the way he's acting out. You know, he's the one hitting, he's the one biting, he's the one having these blowouts, and he's going to be the one being sent every day. He's going to come home and say that he got sent to the principal's office.
Mm-hmm.
And that broke my heart.
Yeah.
And I think that, like, as far as becoming a shameless mom is, like, I'm so set on him not having this label, right? Because it's not who he is. He's not a bad kid. He's not malicious in any way. It's just a misunderstanding. And so, like, I like, I'm constantly talking to the school, constantly talking to the people, other adults around him, trying to educate people about it. And because like we were chatting early, like if my kid got bit by another kid at school, like I'd be like, dude, what's wrong with your kid? Like, I mean, that was how I used to be, right? Like thinking that the kid, like that it was a parental thing or that it was an environmental thing. And I've now come to realize that it's not, well, could be, but it's not always.
Right.
And, you know, I feel bad when my kid has bit somebody else's kid or hit them, but I'm also trying to show a lot of compassion and like understanding and just, it's almost like an awareness piece about this whole other disorder that I didn't even know about. And a lot of my peers, like a lot of my mom friends, didn't know about it either.
Yeah. I actually have a number of good friends who have children with either who are somewhere along the lines of like SPD or ADD, ADHD. And some right. of these cases are really severe. And, you know, some of my closest friends have like had to have their kids move schools multiple times and all sorts of things. And so when you talk about having your kid be the one who is like always singled out because they can't manage their behavior, they can't be managed yeah. in a typical classroom and those kinds of things, that is so overwhelming. I mean, obviously it's overwhelming for the kid, but for the parent, when you just want to be able to protect your kid and you know that like you have this kid who underneath it all is like really sweet and really sensitive and wants to be a good kid. And when you see these things happening, really, you know, I've had good friends who they'll say like, you know, 3 or 4 year old is saying like, I'm a bad kid. And
yes.
You know, I'm not good at anything and I can't do anything right. And I always get into trouble and I'm not smart and all these mm-hmm. kinds, there's like this language they come up with. And you're like, literally no one has ever said that to you. No one has ever said you're a bad kid or no one's ever said you're not smarter, you know, but they mm-hmm. pick up on, they like the comparison trap starts really freaking early.
And the labeling.
Yeah.
Like I'm a bad kid or yeah. I'm the one that gets in trouble. Like I've literally had kids from his school when I volunteered at a school, they're like one of the older, he's in a Montessori school now, but one of the older kids was like, Ezra hits a lot and Ezra gets in trouble all the time. Mm. Like he's telling me this.
Yeah.
And I'm like, I know we're working on yeah. it. Like, you know, I mean, you can't really explain sensory processing to a 6-year-old, but yeah. you know, nobody wants to play with him anymore on the playground because he's now the kid that hits.
Yeah.
You know? And so it's just, and my heart hurts around it, but I'm also like shameless around explaining it to everybody mm-hmm. and making sure everybody knows about it. And then a thing that more and more people need to know about it, I'm actually trying to have like an educational night at school because even the guides and even the teachers don't even know about it.
Yeah.
And I'm so thankful for our first preschool teacher who like stepped up and has saw the signs and said something.
Yeah.
And it's weird. So he goes to a Montessori school now and so many of Montessori teachers don't even know about sensory processing disorder. They know about, you know, ADHD and they know about autism and, but they didn't even know about this. And so I'm just
so
like,
surprising,
oh my God.
So surprising to me. Cause it was on my, I don't know why. Well, I think it was on my radar because I suspected my child had it. So maybe it was something that my doctor brought up to me. And I think I had a couple of friends who.
Yeah. Like you don't know until you know. Right.
Yeah. Because now I'm kind of like, it's been on my radar for a while and I definitely, I think that it's way more common than we know. One of the things we've talked about with Vinny, so there's a little girl in his class who she has definitely, I don't know exactly, I don't know if she has diagnoses or what the situation is, but she definitely is learning in a different way and on a different timeline than other peers in her classroom. And she's definitely really handsy, a lot of touching, pinching, mm-hmm. and biting, and just a lot of different things. And Vinny's really conscientious of her, like, being uncomfortable when she gets in his space. And like, he's always right. Like she very gently bit him like a year and a half ago. And he still mm-hmm. is like, well, she bites me all the time. I'm like, yeah, she kind of really gently bit you like a year and a half ago. She doesn't bite you all right. the time. But mm-hmm. what we've talked about with that, with her, because he brings her name up a lot. He just likes to tell me stories about her. Like today she did this right. and today she did that. And I'm always interested because it comes up sometimes way more than her other kids in his class. And so, but it's not necessarily anything bad. It's just kind of this commentary. So we started talking about that she's still learning how to use her words and she's learning how to use her body in safe ways. And she's still learning this and that and the other thing
yeah.
rather than like, well, she has this disorder and she has this and she, right. You know, we really talk about she's still learning and how can you help her, you know? Mm-hmm. And so the teacher last year was like, at the end of the year, he's like, yeah, Vinny's really taken an interest in her. And she was still struggling with potty training. And he was like, he was wanting to like help her, like change her,
learn,
pull up in her underwear. Like every time she had an accident, the teacher had to be like, actually that's like aww. The teacher's job. But I was like, about to burst into tears because I was so proud because I was yeah. getting worried that he was really like pushing her away and not wanting to be her friend. And then so then the teacher's like, yeah, so now he's trying to potty train her.
That's so cute.
I know. But it's been, I think, a great lesson to Vinny's class to have a lot of conversation around different people learn things in different ways. And some people learn their words first and some people, they don't have words. And so they have to use hands and Mm-hmm. You know, and sometimes that's for sign language, and sometimes it's to stay safe. They push people away because they don't feel safe or comfortable, and they don't know.
Right.
So there's a lot of really valuable conversation that can happen around that. I really admire that you're trying to create awareness in the school and in Ezra's classroom so that people can be conscientious of their language and kind of the trickle down effect that's going to have on all the kids in the classroom, like on Ezra's experience, of course, but on all the kids in the classroom, because this is not going to be their only exposure to someone who learns differently than they do or someone behaves right. differently than them.
Totally.
It's really, really valuable.
This episode is supported by Mysteries About True Histories, a podcast for your kiddos. So from the creators of the hit podcast Who Smarted and Netflix's Brainchild comes the adventurous world of Mysteries About True Histories, affectionately known as MATH. Every episode follows Max and Molly, who have just been recruited into a secret order of problem solvers. On an adventure through time, packed with puzzles, hidden equations, history, and laughs, making learning cool. This podcast is perfect for ages 6 and up, and new episodes drop every Thursday, each stacked with so much laughter that your kiddos won't even realize how much they're learning. I love a show where, as a parent, you're like, hey, let's listen or watch this or whatever, and your kids are thinking they're like getting extra device time or what have you, and you're like, they're learning right now. So it feels like such a big win. So I want you to go check out Mysteries About True Histories wherever you listen to podcasts. You can tune into Mysteries About True Histories with your kids. You can follow and listen on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts, wherever you're listening to this podcast. So go check out Mysteries About True Histories to listen in and have some fun with your kid while they learn today. This episode is supported by Nutrafol. Did you know that hair thinning will happen to approximately 1 in 2 women? If you're among them, you are not alone. Thinning hair is normal, but it's not openly talked about, so it can feel lonely and frustrating and sometimes even embarrassing when you're going through it yourself. Join the over 1 million people who are doing something about their thinning hair with Nutrafol. Nutrafol is the number one dermatologist recommended hair growth supplement, with over 1 million people seeing thicker, stronger, faster growing hair with less shedding. Oh my gosh, I am a heavy shedder. So if you are a heavy shedder, or if you are someone who's wanting to thicken your hair, I definitely want you to try out Nutrafol. I have loved using it myself, and I know multiple other people who've used it and have found great results. While many supplements rely solely on ingredient studies, Nutrafol clinically tests final formulations to ensure their efficacy. In a clinical study, 86% of women reported improved hair growth after taking Nutrafol Women's Hair Growth Supplement for 6 months. To get started, you can take their hair quiz on Nutrafol.com, which will give you a personalized health plan based on your special root causes. Nutrafol is committed to helping you identify root causes of any shedding or hair loss so that you can really start to rebuild healthy hair in a way that is customized to you. So take the first steps to visibly thicker, healthier hair. For a limited time, Nutrafol is offering our listeners $10 off your first month subscription and free shipping when you go to Nutrafol.com and enter the promo code SHAMELESS. Find out why 4,500 healthcare professionals and hairstylists recommend Nutrafol for healthier hair. Go to Nutrafol.com. That's Nutrafol.com, promo code SHAMELESS. Nutrafol.com, code SHAMELESS.
So let's shift a little. I want to kind of bridge this.
Yeah.
How did challenges in motherhood impact your professional life? And you've touched on this a little bit already, but how has that impacted your professional life? I mean, in whatever time frame you want to address, but I'm guessing kind of most specifically in the last year.
Yeah,
or so.
We can, I mean, gosh, motherhood, you know, has been in and out for a while, but most specifically, so in the last 6 months, so back in October, actually, so I used to be like what I used to call the ultimate side hustler. And my whole business is built around supporting women start side hustles and be successful in their side hustles and all different types of side hustles. And I used to wear that as like a badge of honor, really. Like I could do all the things, right? Yeah. Motherhood and having a business. And I worked in corporate and like all that kind of stuff. And for a while, it felt really good. Like it's because I loved my corporate work. I loved my coaching business and obviously loved motherhood, right? And so I could do it all. And I felt like superwoman. Mm-hmm. And I did it in a way that felt really good. And that's kind of at the core of what I teach, is like doing it in a way that feels good to you. Because we all can burn out and we all can do that. And that was kind of my past. My story is about burnout and stuff like that. So 6 months ago, so when I found all about this about Ezra, which we were already struggling with, like finding babysitters and nannies and having him find a school that would work with him. And then we got diagnosed. I just felt like, you know what, something needs to change. I need to be more. So I used to travel a lot for my corporate job and I just was ready to be done. And so how like being a mom has impacted me was I finally made the decision to quit my corporate job last October. And it was kind of a big deal because I had built my brand so much around like the ultimate side hustler. And I still support women in that way, but I'm now can, you know, say, well, you can quit too. You know, I mean, the whole supporting people. And a lot of my clients have supported through quitting their jobs and transitioning in whichever way that felt most comfortable to them, which I call taking the stairs. But where I finally got with my life is like, I just needed more space and time. My business was doing great and my business has been doing great for a while, but I just never really wanted to let go of the corporate job. But it finally came to a head when I was like, but it's more important for me to really do this with Ezra, like be there, taking him to OT, like making sure he's not at school as long as he, you know, used to be. And it was ready. Like we were ready to just, and I think that's how it's impacted my professional life. I mean, I just recently let go of a corporate position that I loved and that I loved what I did and that I was in it for 14 years. So, you know, you just kind of, you know, things just shift so much when you become a mom and you just let go of the things that maybe aren't serving you anymore, for sure.
I think that's so powerful. And I think that there's so many stories. I mean, speaking of stories and vanilla stories and those kinds of things, mm-hmm. there's so many stories about like, you know, have a side hustle, build it up until you can leave this job that you hate and you can stop working for the man or being yep. in corporate America and blah, 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 all this stuff. And yours is totally the opposite. Like,
yes.
I have a corporate job I love 100%, but I'm going to quit it because there's other things that I need to prioritize right now.
Yeah.
And I don't think that's the typical route.
No,
I think the typical
not.
Route it's- is very much like the
And Sarah, that's what my whole chapter is about, like in my book.
So, I didn't even know.
Yeah, my whole chapter is called Side Hustle Success and how I chose to do things differently because I didn't like the whole jumping off the cliff thing never felt good to me. Never felt good to me. It just the whole jumping off the cliff and build your plane on the way down never felt good to me. And so that's why I now like to say you can take the stairs. Like you can do every step of the way. It feels good mm-hmm. to you. Like, I mean, yes, you have to challenge yourself. You have to push yourself out of your comfort zone. But you don't have to just jump. And
Right.
I always say I'm kind of one of those, I started a business because I knew I wanted, like I desired something more, which is kind of my personality trait. A lot of entrepreneurs, that right personality trait, you desire something more. I desired to express myself in a different way. I knew that I wanted more flexibility, but as time went on, I still loved what I did. Like, and my corporate background was animal nutrition and I worked with horses and I loved that. And I still love that. And so, yeah, I was kind of this weird, I love talking about how you can start a business. It doesn't mean you have to quit your job.
Right.
If that's not what you want to do. Now, I had a lot of clients who do want to quit their job, but it's like finding pleasure and happiness in the journey versus like always just pining for the destination.
Right, right. Define soulful side of hustling then and talk about that. Because I think sometimes, I mean, I think in many cases, that, you know, developing a side hustle. So let's take an example of like working a corporate job, but deciding that like, I want to become a photographer and do like family mm-hmm. photography. So a lot of times we build these side hustles as like a way out mm-hmm. and a way out of a job that we don't love or a way to maybe like, you know, maybe have more time at home or more flexibility or what have you. What's kind of your definition and criteria around soulful side hustling?
Yeah. And thank you for bringing that up because it's something that I've just kind of recently gotten more clear on because I have my Women's Side Hustle Society, which is my group that, you know, I taught my baby, like my group on, it's a Facebook group, but I've been active for like 4 years and it was started to support women in that are, you know, trying to grow their business on the side. But what I found is that, you know, there's kind of two different types of people out there, right? There's lots, but when it came to people entering into the group or reaching out to me, it was people who just wanted to make money and people who wanted to really fulfill their purpose and passion in life.
Yeah.
And the soulful side hustle to me is more about like really discovering what it is you lights you up, like your actual gifts, like your what you're meant to be doing in this world, like what you're really good at, and then creating income from that or creating a business around that. And so it's really like the stuff that lights you up in the world and creating a business around that versus I'm just going to do whatever it takes to make a dollar because I hate my life. Yeah. Right. And now there could be so many hybrids of all of that.
Mm-hmm.
But I found that people who, because you see the spamming, you know, we all see the spamming on social media, like, oh, talk to me and I'll help you make $1,000 in 10 days or whatever. Yeah. Like, and those people have come into my group and I've like kindly had to talk to them about like, this isn't that place for that. It's not about, I mean, I don't want to discount MLMs at all in network marketing because some people do really good with that. But they're just doing it just to make money versus, because I do have clients that that's what they do, but it's because they love it.
And they build community around it.
Yes, and,
they,
and it's like a beauty counter or something. It's because they're so like, they love that it's non-toxic and how it's changed their lives. Like that's the soulful side hustle, right? And so it's about like, what do you really care about? What's really important to you in your life? What are you really good at? And then executing a business around that.
Right.
Versus just being like, well, what can I do to make money? And there are so many platforms and so many podcasts and so many other groups that are focused around money and making the money just no matter what, in lots of million different ways. And that's where I felt that there's kind of this hole, especially for women. So my clients are people who are like looking to fulfill their passion and do it and then create, you know, their business around that. So it's very fulfilling. And the way that I like to explain it to people is like, you know, building a business on top of a 9-to-5, on top of motherhood, on top of all the things that we have responsibilities for is hard. Like I'm not going to discount it. It's not easy because you have to dedicate time to it. And, but the thing about it is, you have to love it. It has to be your baby. It has to fulfill you in some way because you are going to take time away from other things that you love.
Yes.
And so,
so if you're saying yes to that thing, you're saying no to other things.
Yeah. And it just,
and oftentimes that's time with your family.
Yeah. Like, so, yeah. While you're building your business, you might have to work a couple, you know, dedicate some evenings, you know, to work on your business or a day on the weekend or, you know, and this is the conversations that we have in the Women's Side Hustle Society. It's just about like, yes, you do have to commit time if you want it to really happen, to turn it from a hobby to an actual business, you know, you have to put in the time. And so, because I've had people say, well, what if you want to throw in the towel? Well, yeah, you are going to want to throw in the towel. You are going to be frustrated. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So the reason why you want to create a soulful side hustle is because you want it to fulfill like that passion of yours, because that's why it's worth it. Because if it was just another job that I had to show up to do just to get money from, then you might as well just stay in your corporate job.
Yes, totally. Totally. And I love your point that like you are going to want to throw in the towel. You are, because the thing is, it's either going to get hard or scary or both. Or I mean, it definitely not like it will for sure get hard and or scary. And oftentimes those things happen at the same time. And so, yeah, like there's going to be times when you're like doubting yourself or wondering if it's worth pushing through. And that's why you have to be connected to that. Why you have to be connected to like, why is this the thing I want to talk about every day for the rest of my life, or the thing I want to do every day for the rest of my life that doesn't even feel like work, even though it's hard and scary sometimes. Mm-hmm. It's like, I know that I'm where I need to be, want to be, enjoy being.
Yeah. And that's the soulful side hustle. But to me, that's like, because you are taking time away from, like, you might not be able to meet your friends for happy hour every Friday anymore, or like whatever you're saying no to, but you're saying no to it because you also love what you're creating. Yeah. So
can you give some examples of side hustles that you've seen different? I would love to give moms some context around this for moms who are in that position of like, I would love to leave my job and have, regardless of whether or not you love your job or hate your job, but I'd love to have more time freedom or flexibility and those kinds of things. What kinds of side hustles do you see the moms in your group doing? And just to kind of give people some ideas of some specifics that might speak to them.
Yeah. Well, so usually what I do, so I do like a deep dive with people around like really discovering this with them, because some people don't know. Sometimes you have to go back to like what really inspires them, what they're really good at. Right. But like I have a client who started out just as a yoga instructor, but now she guides people into like, she calls it soulgasmic yoga. So it's all about like living a soulgasmic life, like pleasurable life. Like again, what she was already doing it.
Yeah.
In her daily life. And she just kind of started teaching yoga at night just for fun. And her kids are teenagers. But now it's totally developed into this whole movement around like pleasurable life and how you can do it in a way that's like feeling good to you. Right. So that was something she was super passionate about and just kind of clicked. Some people, I have a mom who she is really passionate about, again, as she had kids, she is super passionate about like reducing all the toxicities in their life. And she got really into essential oils. And now she like teaches classes on like how to reduce like common hold toxins in your household. And she also like blends in how she uses her essential oils and she cares about it. Like she like literally loves it, like talking about it.
Yeah.
And so she teaches classes around that. I have a client who has been an avid hiker and she has worked like her own personal journey was working through anxiety, like severe anxiety and depression. And now she coaches people around anxiety by taking them on hikes. which I thought was
very cool.
Very cool. Yeah. So it's kind of like the sky's the limit on like whatever's lighting you up and like whatever you feel like your purpose and your mission is to help people with. Like, we can create businesses around that. And I think that's the powerful part of it.
And I think the examples that you gave are, I think that they're awesome, unique examples, unique to those individuals. And they're also, there's this commonality among them. And I think common between people who, you know, start a side hustle and people who go to work for themselves is that they've found this thing that they would do even if they wouldn't get paid for it.
Exactly.
And yep. I think that's where, and that's hard to find. And it some is. People are like, there's not anything I would do unless, you know, I mean, like, I joke about like, how can I figure out how to get paid for watching Real Housewives?
Right.
And like, you know, like, do I need to, there's too many Real Housewives podcasts out there. I can't do that. Right. But like finding that thing that you really love that you would do even if you didn't get paid, or you could talk about every day for the rest of your life with passion and behind it. And like, you wouldn't get bored with it. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I love that you work with people to help them define that, because I think often we're not conditioned to even consider those kinds of things if we've been in a traditional corporate model for a long time. Like, you're not, there's no space in a traditional corporate model to be like, what are you really passionate about? What are your hobbies that you love? And if you're a mom, you're like, a hobby? Like, when's the last time I had a hobby? So it can definitely be a lot to take on and consider. And I love that you work with people one-on-one to do that deep dive, because I think that's so valuable to really kind of get in touch with what you love.
Then you get to make money from it. Right, there's a whole different mindset shift around that. It's like, I get to do this now. I get to show up and do this and I get money. I get to make money from it. Like, how like exciting is that?
Yeah. And that was huge for me. So the podcast for me was a side hustle to my gym.
Yeah.
And I definitely gave myself this window of like, we're going to just try this for 6 months and see what happens. Like, mm-hmm. I'm not setting out to make money on this. I want to see if I love it. If I love it, then I want to figure out how I can make money from it and how it could become more of where I could build a business around it. And maybe this could be become my full-time hustle. So I had to definitely like give myself that space to make sure I really loved it, because I didn't want to get myself trapped in something that I didn't really love. So I think that's the brilliance of a side hustle, is like, it can be a little experimental, and there can be room for like, this might all fall apart and blow up and I might hate it.
Well, and that's why I don't like, and it's funny because I'm very clear on who my clients are. Like jumping off the cliff is sometimes not the right path for you, right? Like, if you just dove and put everything into it, that would be jumping off the cliff. But taking the stairs, like, okay, let's try it out. I'm going to feel into it. And that's what's so lovely about, like, a lot of people have a lot of resentment around starting their businesses while still working a 9-to-5. But I actually think you can totally flip it and be like, you get this opportunity to experiment it for a little bit and see how it goes without that risk factor that's going to, you know, can I even afford my roof over my head, right?
Right. I think that makes so much sense. So tell us about the side hustle that led you to become an international best-selling author and how that kind of came to be.
Yeah, so I have my coaching business and I do retreats and all these things. I've been doing that for years around the Women's Side Hustle Society, my podcast, all that kind of stuff. And I kind of was approached by a publisher who was, she puts out this book series about sharing your story. And women from all different walks of life, different backgrounds, different types of stories, definitely not all business stories. And I decided to say yes to that last year. And again, part of my theories and part of what I teach is, you know, always saying yes to things that feel really good and in alignment with how you want to be feeling, even if that's not how you feel right now. And so I said yes to this, and it's a book that's called Women Who Influence. And I feel like it has changed my life in the last 6 months, just because of like the process of writing your story and getting public about it. You know what I mean? Like, just going forth with that. So that's the side hustle around like becoming an international best-selling author.
Yeah.
It's funny because it started out that I wanted to tell my side hustle story. Like, this particular, all that we've talked about today around like choosing to do things differently, choosing to side hustle instead of quitting my job, doing it in a way that feels really good and taking the stairs. Like, that is what my chapter's about. But what has kind of come through this, and I can't, like, in 24 hours, we already became an international best-selling book, which is huge. And so then now amazing. It's like about, wow, like, just this movement of telling stories and giving validation to people to tell their stories and kind of spreading the ripple effect around everybody's story is worthy and worth sharing. And there's 30 stories in this book of all different women. And it gives me chills, like, all the different stories. So it's feel like I don't even know where that's going to go, you know, whether I'm going to speak more or, you know, talk more about storytelling or where this is going to end up. But it's just, it's the soulful side hustle again. It's I'm doing it. I don't expect to make any money from it. When I said yes to doing a book project, I just knew that it felt really good to say yes and to tell my story in that way.
Oh, I love that. That's so cool. So I have more questions, but we got to wrap it up. So my producer doesn't hate me when I send her a long, long thing.
I know.
To edit.
I can just come on again. We can talk.
But I know this has been so good. And I also want to make sure that people know where they can connect with you. If you could specifically tell us about, do you have a free Facebook group?
I do. Mm-hmm.
Okay. So where's the free Facebook group? And then how can they access your book? And everything will be linked up in the show notes as well. So yeah. Go ahead and tell us those places though.
Thank you. So probably the easiest way to get to my book is if you go to my website, which is just GinaFresquez.com, and there's like a link, it just says get my book, and that takes you right to Amazon. So that's easy. There's also, it's bit.ly/womenwhoinfluence. So it's the book Women Who Influence. But my Facebook group, which is like my baby, my love, I put everything into my Facebook group, which is our community of almost 1,000 people already. I'm really specific about who joins. Like it's all women who are side hustling or what I call my alumni, people who started in the group and then they've quit their job since. So they're now alumni of the Side Hustle Society. And so it really is a cultivated group who are here to support you in that process. So that is just facebook.com/groups/Women's Side Hustle Society. So, or if you look in groups, just Women's Side Hustle Society. And then also podcast, same name, Women's Side Hustle Society. So super easy when it comes to that.
Perfect. I'm taking notes here. I want to make sure I have your podcast linked up. Is your podcast on your website as well?
It is. Yep.
Okay. So people can find it there. Okay, cool. Yay. So I'll have this all linked up in the show notes. I want to make sure people can connect with you. And Gina, it's been fun and inspiring and you made me cry. So I just appreciate everything that you shared because I knew I wanted to have you come on and talk about your work. And when you opened the door to potentially talking about your parenting journey, that was right away. I was like, yes, let's do that. So I appreciate you being open and vulnerable and honest about that because I know it will help other shameless moms out there. So thank you for spending time with us today.
Thank you.
Please come back next time you have another project to talk about.
Totally. Anytime.
Thank you so much for spending time with Gina and me in the Shameless Mom Academy today. I hope you learned something new. I hope you were inspired. And I really hope that if you know someone whose child might have sensory processing disorder, or maybe just there's some questionable things and you think that this episode might connect them to some good resources and be valuable information, please, please, please share this episode out. My biggest dream for all of you is that you can live a happy, fulfilled life and that you can inspire your children to do the same through the ways that you learn about who they are and how their brains work and how the world can cater to their strengths and especially not allow them to stand out as being different and potentially be labeled as being difficult. And so I just so appreciate Gina coming on and sharing her story about how they've managed everything with Ezra so that other parents who might be in a similar situation or have similar questions about their child's behavior and maybe their child's wiring can maybe do some investigation and get some answers. I do have an episode coming up with Debbie Reber in which we talk about her book Differently Wired, which is coming out in mid-June. So keep an eye out for that because this actually will kind of pick up where we left off today with Gina talking about Ezra's SPD. We'll definitely dive into other kind of conversations around how children can be differently wired and often be so different than their parents, which can be puzzling and confusing and overwhelming and sometimes exhausting. So we'll definitely be continuing that conversation. Additionally, Gina is the side hustle queen. So I hope that you learned about building a soulful side hustle. And like she said, taking the stairs instead of taking a risky leap into territory that you might not feel prepared for. Please share this episode by taking a screenshot of it and sharing it on social media. You can tag me at the Shameless Mom Academy on Facebook or Instagram. I will always reply right back and send you direct messages and hearts and blowing kisses and all those kinds of things. I love to connect with you on social media. It means the world to me. Please know that if this is your first time listening to the show, we are back here every Monday and Wednesday with a brand new episode, and you can subscribe to the show so you never miss an episode if you go to shamelessmom.com/review. That will drop you right into our Apple Podcasts category where you can subscribe to the show so that you get every episode as soon as it is released. While you're there, you can also rate and review the show, which means the world to me because it keeps us highly ranked so that other shameless moms can find us and connect with us and we can continue to build the shameless tribe. Again, thank you for being here today. I hope you have a wonderful day, a wonderful week. I'll see you again on Monday. And until then, no matter what you do today, make sure you do it shamelessly.
When it comes to raising kids, there's so much to consider. Things like, what do we feed them? When do we feed them? How do they sleep? What does it look like to raise kind kids? How does their nervous system work? How do I keep myself calm? What are my triggers? There's so much that comes into play, and we are distilling all of that information for you at Voices of Your Village podcast, where we bring experts in the field of early childhood and education and psychology and across the board so that you don't have to comb the internet for information. You get to show up and hang out and have shame-free, judgment-free conversations and insights into what it looks like to raise kind, empathetic, emotionally intelligent humans. I'm Alyssa Blask Campbell. I have a master's degree in early childhood education. I'm a mom of two, and I am walking this journey right alongside you doing this work. Come hang out with me at Voices of Your Village, and we can dive into real conversations with actionable tips.